Breakthrough.
You are now listening to Breakthrough News. It's 5 p.m. You're listening to Breakthrough News, and this is The Punch Out. We're following the news all day so you don't have to, giving you everything you need to know about what's in the headlines and what should be. And yes, we are back on The Punch Out, 23rd of November, 2021. Very happy to be back with you on the show. Plenty for you here on the show, as we always do. And this will be our last show this week, dear listeners, taking a little bit of a holiday. But like as I said, plenty for you here today. We're going to be talking about the plight of those who are poor in prison. We're going to be talking about how the Sudanese coup government's attempt to stitch up something that looks like quote-unquote democracy is falling apart. But before we get to either of those two very important stories, we want to talk about the impact of mass incarceration on parents and their children. As many people get ready to celebrate the holidays with their families here in the United States, now seems as good a time as any to relate to you that half of all imprisoned people in the United States are parents of children under 18. And of course, won't have the option to reunite with their families this year, and perhaps for many years in the future. 47% of those in state prisons are parents of minors, and 57% of those in federal prison are parents of those under the age of 18. As the Sentencing Project details, quote, most imprisoned parents of minor children are fathers, 626,800 fathers compared to 57,700 mothers. But a higher proportion of imprisoned women, 58%, than imprisoned men, 47%, have minor children. Between 1991 and 2016, the latest year for which national data is available, the number of fathers in prison increased 48%, the number of mothers increased 96%. The Sentencing Project also notes that, quote, 2.7 million children have a parent serving time in prison or jail on any given day, and over 5.2 million have had an incarcerated parent at one point during their lives. And they go on to further note that, quote, the percentage of children who have experienced parental incarceration varies widely state to state, from a low of 3% in New Jersey to a high of 13% in Kentucky. The prevalence of parental incarceration also varies considerably by race. In 2018, 20% of Native children, 13% of Black children, 6% of Latino children, and 6% of white children had experienced parental incarceration at some point in their lives. And also, the research from the Sentencing Project details that, quote, the impacts of parental incarceration on children include psychological stress, antisocial behavior, academic suspension or expulsion, economic hardship, and criminal activity, end quote. Some of the most recent numbers we have on the issue of contact between parents and children come from 2004, unfortunately, but those numbers are still quite notable and represent the structural challenges of contact between families, mainly the long distance between people's homes and where they are incarcerated. On average, people are incarcerated roughly 100 miles from their home address. In the 2004 data we just mentioned, quote, over half of parents in state prisons, 59%, and just under half, 45%, of parents in federal prisons did not have any personal visits with their minor children while in prison in 2004, end quote. The Sentencing Project also details a range of serious social consequences that come along with this, including the fact that due to a law passed in 1997 that requires parents to forfeit all rights to their children in the foster care system, if they've been in the foster care system for 15 of the most recent 22 months, means that many people with long sentences are forced to give up their parental rights. In the 5 years after this law passed, parental rights being forfeited due to incarceration rose by 250%. And the Sentencing Project also notes that Bill Clinton's quote-unquote Welfare Reform Act of 1996 banned people with felony drug convictions from TANF and SNAP, meaning that parents who fall into this category, felony drug convictions, once released, have a much harder time providing for their children since most people leaving prison end up in or near poverty. There is some movement at the state level and some, at least, rhetoric at the federal level to address many of these things, but very little that is changing the overall trends. All in all, just even more evidence of the deleterious effect of mass incarceration on families and communities around the country. The attempt of the Sudanese coup government to present the coup as legitimate by striking a deal with the prime minister they deposed in late October seems to already be falling apart, even though it was just announced a few days ago. 12 cabinet ministers from Hamdok's former administration resigned in protest today, rejecting the deal between Hamdok and the military coup leaders, saying that it legitimized the coup rather than representing any sort of democratic opening. Their resignation means that Hamdok is essentially the only person from the former pre-coup government, which was formed after mass protests in 2019 deposing the previous government, that is participating with this coup attempt, which means the current situation remains very much with the post-coup status quo. The military seized power, it seems, in order to facilitate turning the so-called transitional process into one that was more or less guaranteed to cement a powerful role for themselves and certain former members of the former government, including some of its key players in the business community who enriched themselves through preferential state contracts and outright plunder. And as we mentioned yesterday, one of the key elements of the return of Hamdok included the quote-unquote reorganization of the ministry designed to claw back some of that plundered wealth, including reforming or reorganizing the appeals process. The resignation of the ministers is also bound to further energize the protest movement that has continued to come out in large numbers around the country and which has projected another massive mobilization, and they go by the moniker of March of Millions, on November 25th. The movement, which is organized around neighborhood-based resistance committees, which organize grassroots resistance, a number of professional associations and unions, and also political parties, including the Communist Party and other non-party political movements like the Garifuna movement. These forces are all united around the demands of a new civilian government to manage the transition to elections in 2023, one that is drawn only from the broader anti-coup movement and which establishes a clear role for the resistance committees, professional associations, unions, and political parties to play a role in pre-2023 governance. And they've connected these demands to the need for more than just political change, but social and economic change for the country. So in a way, the situation is still at something of an impasse. Neither side is yet able to impose their vision for the future of the country. And so, the struggle continues. Over the last few weeks, we've been reporting to you about the difficulties faced by those in prison, getting access to basic hygienic goods, food, and decent clothing because of the incredibly low expenditures by states on these items for the incarcerated, and, in addition, the high cost of phone calls and other ways to stay connected to loved ones. And also how many who can't get help from friends and family on these costs often suffer from severe hunger and depression. Now we want to turn to another aspect of this, the so-called indigence programs in prisons around the country. Most states claim to provide support for inmates who are indigent, which essentially just means very poor. However, there is a catch. For the states for which there is information, most of them require inmates to keep such a low balance on their prison accounts or books that they are often placed outside of eligibility by extremely low-paid prison labor or small sums they can get from friends and family. Even more, in 18 states, the support is actually issued as a loan. As the Prison Policy Project details, quote, "The monetary thresholds for indigent status range from a low of $0, meaning that people with $1 to their name would not be considered indigent, to a maximum of $25. Over half of states have their limits set between $0 and $10. Additionally, most states require that people keep these low balances for at least a month before qualifying. And they go on to further note that, quote, "Alabama, Connecticut, Massachusetts, and Utah all require people to wait even longer, from 45 to 90 days," end quote. And the Prison Policy Project goes on to note that, quote, "Many indigence policies specifically prohibit deposits and income of any amount in their definitions. For example, an incarcerated person in Maryland making 15 cents an hour for their labor can't qualify for indigent status. While 15 cents an hour will hardly make someone rich, people are not allowed to work and receive free access to indigent supplies." And of course, this research also goes on to detail that the assistance is usually the absolute bare minimum in the first place, all of which goes to underscore the fact that prisons in essentially every state in the United States do not provide enough money for incarcerated people to eat properly or maintain basic human connections. So just add that to all the other evidence, including that we've provided earlier today, that mass incarceration is a system that is just rotted to the core. That's the punch out for today.
We're with you Monday through Friday, 5 p.m. here in New York East Coast Standard Time, 2 p.m. in Los Angeles Pacific Standard Time, and 9 p.m. GMT. And of course, you can support everything we do here at Breakthrough News at patreon.com/breakthroughnews. It's your patronage that keeps all of our offerings here at Breakthrough News moving forward. And of course, you can check us out across all your social media platforms, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, at BT Newsroom.